Bum, bum, bum.
It's actually crazy just like watching the missiles rain down on Israel.
Yeah, so what you're hearing is the sirens in Israel as Iran launched 200 ballistic missiles, some getting through the Iron Dome into Israel. And globally, Marcus just got really scared.
Oh, yeah. So. This is peak global uncertainty, I think, mm-hmm. at least on this year. And I think we should say, obviously, before we get into this roll up, just a sentiment check. This is like not... This is bad news for everybody, for the entire world, right? And I think Lex Fridman put it well when he said, probability of World War III feels higher than ever. A global war would destroy humanity. I pray for the wisdom of our leaders. I think, you know, we also echo that sentiment. This is kind of a concerning time that we're in, for sure.
I think all eyes are kind of pointed at the Middle East right now, not really knowing what happens next. But neither side, either the anti-Israel, pro-Israel side, really seems to be interested in taking the foot off the gas at the present moment.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully this doesn't escalate into something wider. And of course, all of this global instability affects markets, including crypto markets. And that's been a theme of the week. This has been the worst start to October as these tensions have... raged on. And it calls into question, I think, what we've talked about. You know, remember that BlackRock report mm-hmm. where they were talking about Bitcoin is actually sort of an asset when there's global uncertainty, like it should appreciate the way gold does in global uncertainty. It kind of wasn't in the aftermath of this, which is kind of interesting. So this is published the day after these attacks. Last night's Bitcoin price action, Bitcoin was -4, while gold was up almost 1% in the aftermath of the Iranian attack. And this is kind of puzzling when you try to think about Bitcoin being sort of a global instability type of hedge.
This is what BlackRock was talking about as their frame of understanding around Bitcoin. Now, there could be a difference of timeframes here. Bitcoin could just like go risk off in the very short term, while global instability over the long term might actually benefit Bitcoin. That is still possible. Also, since we're talking about this, there was this tweet that went out with this new Polymarket front page. We're just talking about all these different markets that are related to this crisis in the Middle East. Will Israeli forces enter Lebanon in September? 86% chance. Will Iran strike on Israel before November? Will the U.S. evacuate their Beirut embassy before October? And the tweet on this, the screenshot of Polymarket, says, it feels wrong that Polymarket has an entire Hezbollah betting section that makes war look like a football game to bet on, which actually caught Vitalik's attention, who went and responded, I'm actually in support of these. I support these existing. The point of Polymarket is that the perspective of traders, it's a betting site, but from the perspective of viewers, it's a news site. So there's all kinds of people, including elites on Twitter and the internet, making harmful and inaccurate predictions about conflicts, and being able to go and see if people with actual skin in the game think that there is something that has a 2% chance or a 50% chance is a valuable feature that can help keep people sane. So just it's just interesting to see crypto respond to global current events in an increasingly high fidelity fashion.
Yeah, it's like war betting does seem crazy. And like viscerally, yeah. When you look at this and you're like these charts, I guess viscerally, my first reaction is like, is this like a war betting market? And that seems like it does seem wrong. So I share the original like poster's visceral reaction. And yet I also agree with Vitalik that when you look at the probability of all of these things, is there a better source of accurate information around this? Right. Like in a world where I have no idea what's going on and the risks of various escalations and attacks, this is a fantastic source of information for that. Mm-hmm. So I share that from Vitalik as well. I just kind of wonder what the rest of the world thinks about all of this in crypto. And I do think this brings up a broader question in crypto. It's just like, I think sometimes... the outside world looks at crypto and they're like, oh yeah, you guys are betting on like bunkers.
Hyper-financialization.
Yeah, you guys are betting on doomsday scenario and like you're hopeful that, you know, fiat inflates to infinity so that you can go hide in your bunker and have Bitcoin. And that's like a very anti-social type of like take.
Anti-human.
Right? Yeah. But it's interesting with Bitcoin and more so with Ethereum, I think it's kind of juxtaposed from like it's not a pessimistic technology, mm-hmm. but it kind of is. And also it's not purely an optimistic technology, but it also kind of is. It's almost like this cynically optimistic technology, because the entire Bitcoin and even Ethereum project is basically cynical from the perspective of, hey, we can't put all of our trust in centralized institutions. And you know, if we don't have balance of power and decentralizations, they will increase in their level of corruption, right? So it's cynical from that perspective, but it's also optimistic from the perspective of it's building an alternative and it's building a new set of tools that people can use that fosters trust. So it's just this weird juxtaposition I find myself in being a Ethereum and Bitcoin bull.
I think for whatever take there is out there of, oh, these crypto people are just betting on World War III. They're betting on the destruction of the earth. And that's just like what they're doing, what their culture is. It seems to be pretty adjacent to people that say crypto has no use case. And it's because the crypto has no use case for them. But go talk to somebody in a developing nation that has escaped their hyperinflating currency using stable coins. And now, like, there is information here, like $2 million on will Israel invade Lebanon before November, 80% chance. That has now been able to inform people's actions and choices about their lives as it relates to them. And this, of course, is just the Hezbollah section of Polymarket. There's other sections of Polymarket. And now people can have information, good quality, unbiased, market-based information about how to make choices about their lives aside from the fact that other people are betting on these outcomes.
Yeah, agreed. David, we got so much more to talk about. It's not just war stuff today. Roman Storm of Tornado Cash had his motion to dismiss. He had filed a motion to dismiss his court case. It was rejected this week. And David, there are massive implications for this I want to talk to you about. The judge made a ruling that might actually imply all DeFi operating in the United States is illegal, a money transmitter. We got to discuss that.
Ripple might be getting an ETF if Bitwise has its way, but the SEC says not so fast and wants to go back to the drawing board about the XRP versus SEC case about Ripple being a security. Wow, going all the way back there. And then also Visa debuts a fiat tokenization platform on Ethereum with banks as its biggest customer.
Powell's predicting a couple more rate cuts. We'll discuss that. Also, North Korean hackers are invading crypto companies like en masse. This is a wild story we got to get into. And Bankless listeners, stay tuned to the end because I got some alpha on the Kane versus David fight. At least I hope I do.
You do?
And that's happening next week. I hope you do. Anyway, David, you got to
Give you this alpha or do you have this alpha?
It's a mix between your alpha and my alpha combined.
Wait, you have alpha that you haven't given me?
I don't know. Wait till the end and you'll hear all that. It's happening October 11th and there's going to be a special offer for everyone trying to get last minute tickets to that flight and to Permissionless. So stay tuned.
Before we get into the markets, we're going to talk to our friends and sponsors over at ZeroX. We're building ZeroX V2, a full stack upgrade of the whole entire ZeroX project, an upgrade of their crypto trading APIs, bringing you multi-hop and multiplex routing. So if you want to make a big trade or even a small trade, there's a bajillion different permutations of making that trade. And ZeroX V2 goes through all of those permutations to make sure that you get the best final price on your trade, not just the quote. Not just the best quote, but the best final on-chain settled price, the one that actually matters to you. And it's just first in class for large trades, small trades, all kinds of trades. This is what Matcha is built on. I'm a big fan of ZeroX and Matcha and everything that they're doing over there. There is a link in the show notes, bankless.cc/ZeroX, in order to get started.
This one's for the devs, right? It's an API around this.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's get to the prices on the week, David. I want to look at these charts in some detail. Thanks to Kraken for providing these charts. All right, where are we on the week, and where was the missile dip that we saw earlier in the week?
Turns out crypto prices are inversely correlated to the number of missiles launched in the world. Bitcoin currently clocking in at $60,300. Dipped below 60,000, but got back above 60,000 pretty quickly there.
So do you say down 7% on the week?
Down 7%. Oof. That's right.
That's a big one.
That's a lot. That's a lot for Bitcoin.
How about Ether?
Ether down 11% on the week. Started the week at 2,640. Currently at 2,315. I think that actually means it's more like down 12% because that's dipped lower than when I put these numbers in.
Okay, so what does that tell us? Does that tell us that global instability is even worse for Ether relative to Bitcoin?
Yeah, Ether's always been like the more optimistic token of the two. And it always just moves more than Bitcoin. That's right. Let's go and check on the ETF flows, starting with Bitcoin. Where are we at on the Bitcoin ETF flows? It has been some big weeks up last week, but in the last 2 days, $242 million out of the Bitcoin ETF on the first, $64 million out of the Bitcoin ETFs on the second. At some point, these are just going to be called equilibrium. Last week was a huge week. There was like almost $1 billion of inflows into Bitcoin ETFs alone. So, I mean, it's not bleeding that much.
I mean, October 1st was kind of the Tuesday that the missile strikes took place, right? So it makes sense you'd see a drainage.
Is that the first day that there's outflows from the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF? Wow, I think it might be.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, the first, yeah, first day in a while, right?
I think that might be the first day ever.
Ever? I mean, this chart only goes back like 15 days here.
Yeah, I think that's the first day ever that Bitcoin has had outflows.
You actually think that's the first day ever that BlackRock has had outflows?
Yeah, it's always been inflows. Yeah, that's the first red number there. I'm pretty sure that's true.
Someone fact checked that. I don't know about that.
You want to place a bet?
No, I've done it. All my money's going on that Kane versus David bet, okay? All my betting money.
On which side?
Well, we'll have to wait to the end to find out, David.
Ether outflows similar to Bitcoin, $48 million on the first. Actually, had $20 million of inflows on the second. So the inflows weren't too rattled, I would say, by the Middle East conflict.
Okay, there was a milestone that was passed, which is nice though. This is a pretty big milestone. So the iShares, that's the BlackRock Ethereum ETF, just eclipsed $1 billion in total assets. So assets under management of above $1 billion. So it's now in the top 20%. Of all of the ETFs of all time, and it did it in 2 months. So it feels like a big deal, but also it still feels like I don't know, Ethereum's little brother syndrome of like Bitcoin already smashed all of these records. So now I look at this and I'm like, oh cool, like, you know, the second place trophy doesn't seem that great in comparison.
Yeah, the second place trophy going to the little brother that's 5 years younger.
Yeah. Well, especially when you meld it with this, David, this is the Bitcoin ratio, and we're under 0.4 again. What are we on the week?
0.0385. Okay. So that's been as low as it has been. It got this low on the 19th of September. It's back there again.
It's bottoming? Bottoming?
Yeah, we're bottoming. Bottoming can continue. It can continue to bottom.
Yeah, you know, continue to bottom. And how about total crypto market cap? We're still above
2.2 trillion on the week. Yeah, still healthily above 2 trillion.
Well, speaking of health, one thing that is healthy in the Ethereum economy is the layer 2 economies. And thanks to Mantle for this layer 2 update. This is what caught my eye this week. So this is a new set of dashboards created by the Grow the Pi analytics team. It was just like, you know, crushing it. And they call these economics dashboards. And here's what I kind of picked out. This is, if you sort this on the 1 year and you look at L2 profitability, you can see, David, a number of very highly profitable layer twos that have built on Ethereum. So 9 chains in
we
total.
We actually have to define what profit is, because people reject the term profit in the term of chain terms. What do you mean by profitability in the context of a blockchain?
Yeah, so the revenue that a layer two in particular makes is the sum of fees that were paid by users of the chain. So if you use Base, if you use Arbitrum, if you use Optimism, Scroll, etc., right, as a user, you're paying some fee. Okay, so that's the revenue that they make. And the cost in this context is kind of like a gross profit metric. So the cost in this context is the fees that they have to pay the layer one, that is Ethereum, in order to settle and provide data availability for this service. So this is why our analog has been Ethereum, like layer twos are essentially reselling Ethereum block space to the market. And they're reselling that on a profit margin. So the delta is gross profit margin, essentially. Revenue less costs is your gross profit margin. The story here is there's now 9 chains in total that are very much in the green. $150 million they've made in gross profit over the last 12 months. It's really cool to see this economy of chains. Like here was kind of my bull take on it, David, in a tweet summary. Ethereum has already produced 9 chains with gross profit. Each chain is an economy. Ethereum is a federated union of economies with ETH as its money. I think this is very bullish ETH, even if the market's not reflecting it at this point in time.
For some reason, people really just don't like this profit word. And maybe you can argue with the semantics. Maybe you can argue with the idea of profit.
Who doesn't like
But what you cannot argue with is that $50 million of ETH over the last year ended up in Base's treasury, which is Coinbase, or Arbitrum. $22.3 million of ETH went to the Arbitrum treasury. I don't know what you want to call that, but there's $22 million of ETH there. Revenue from Base over the last year, $64 million. Costs of Base, $14 million. That's not a lot of costs in comparison to the revenue. Arbitrum, $58 million of revenue, $35 million of costs. And these are the nine chains that are profitable, the nine layer twos that are profitable, are nine out of the 10 chains that are profitable, the 10th being Tron. Now, Tron is the only, other than the Ethereum layer one.
Are you talking about of all the chains, not just
of all the chains?
Yeah.
All the chains that exist in crypto. The ones that are profitable are the Ethereum layer one, these nine specific layer twos, and Tron.
And that's because you're adding another element here, which is you're considering issuance of these layer one chains as cost, right? So for...
which some people also debate that issuance is a cost, but which is ridiculous.
Layer twos do not have additional inflation or additional issuance.
They do not have to have. They can issue if they choose to, but it's not forced upon them for security because Ethereum pays for their security.
Yeah. And I mean, the reason I say a federated union of economies with Ether as money is because there's another dimension here that the economics charts and Grow the Pie don't show, which I think is really important, is there's a massive amount of Ether being used as economic bandwidth and money on, say, for instance, Base. You know, there's almost 600,000 Ether. It's like $1.3 billion of ETH as money on Base. Equivalent amount, even more, on Arbitrum. And so that is the ETH as money use case. But I will say, David, there's another way to interpret this data set. So I got some pushback from some of the make the L1 great again type folks, like Bread, who's got some great analysis on Twitter. And what he sees is a different lens on this. So what he sees is the profit margin percent. And basically, he's saying that, like, yeah, L2 chains are in the green. They're making profit, but almost at the expense of the L1. So their profit margins are like 95%.
I think that's an accurate take. It is at the expense of the layer one P&L sheet.
Yeah,
that is true.
It is in a way because so these layer twos are making 95% profit, and only for every $1 that they make, they're getting 95 cents of that, and they're only paying 5% back to the ETH L1
that
in terms
is
of yeah, DA
the roll-up centric roadmap. That's what that is.
Yeah, but you could interpret that and you could say, well, ETH is not being burnt anymore. It's not returning cash flows to ETH holders, and therefore it's
true.
Actually bearish ETH.
I don't know if it's bearish ETH. It's bearish if you only value ETH on the P&L.
Yeah. I am back to, and we should have a longer discussion and podcast about all of this, like
the
kind
fact,
of like our
I think
findings
it's evidenced by the fact that we're talking about it for so long.
Yeah, for sure. But like back to ETH, this is fantastic for ETH being money. Mm-hmm. And that is the only thing that matters in the L1 game. I'm coming back to like the L1 tokens are money. Like, that's all that they do. Everything else will be like app layer take fees, and you're not going to be able to preserve that. Anyway, longer discussion. Should we talk about Powell for a minute?
Yeah, Powell says there could be two additional rate cuts this year, but don't get too excited because he says not that fast. Not that fast. He said the recent 50 bips of interest rate cuts should not be interpreted as a sign that future moves will be so aggressive. He says, this is not a committee that feels like it is in a hurry to cut rates quickly. If the economy performs as expected, this would mean two more rate cuts this year, a total of 50 basis points more. So we would get 1% in the year 2024 this year. We do not have like ammo loaded up with 50 bips each. We're just getting, perhaps, if good things go according to plan, just 50% more total this year.
Kind of expected.
Which is fine.
Kind of expected,
that's fine.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the things to monitor, as always, as you now, you know, post-pivot, are the jobs reports, the Fed balance sheet, Fed deficits. All of these things will contribute to the global liquidity and therefore the demand of commodity crypto money assets.
Mm-hmm. And also jobs reports coming in looking good.
So far, yeah. So far, so good. Mm-hmm.
We'll job see. Openings are up and joblessness claims are up.
Although, have
are
you
down,
seen, David, this longshoreman stuff? So,
I have not.
Our
have
Costco
totally
shelves, I can't find toilet paper anymore. There's been like another run on the shelves. It's like
got,
that's happened locally where I live, and it's happening.
You ran out of toilet paper?
Yeah, it's because of people.
You got no toilet paper?
No, I have toilet paper, okay? Because like we maintain a stock, all right? I'm not crazy. I'm a prepper. You know this. I'm a crypto guy. Of course I'd have toilet paper. Are you crazy? But yeah, that's another, you know, kind of thing this week that I don't know if you caught, but I mean that could.
Wait, do I need to go get toilet paper?
David is not a prepper. No, dude. I got it for both of us. I'll send you some if you need it. What do we got coming up?
Coming up next, why was the free speech argument rejected in the Tornado Cash court case, and what does it apply for the rest of the industry? I think Ryan's got a little story to tell.
I do.
And then my story for you guys is Bitwise filing for the XRP ETF, but the SEC is filing for an appeal at this Ripple case, the case that actually decided that crypto assets are not in of themselves securities, that a securities transaction could happen, but that securities transaction does not create a security of the asset. So we're going to talk about this and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred place for buying crypto in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, buy now. Consider clicking the link in the show notes, getting started with Kraken today. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. The Uniswap wallet is officially the preferred wallet of Bankless, and it's the one we use anytime when we want to transact on chain. Whether you're on your browser or on the go, Uniswap wallet makes it easier than ever to swap anytime, anywhere. Use your wallet to transfer funds directly from a top centralized exchange and tap in thousands of tokens across Ethereum and over 10 other chains like Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. Uniswap wallet delivers deep liquidity, fast execution, and reliable quotes with zero gas swaps through Uniswap X. And when it comes to security, you can rest easy knowing it's backed by Uniswap Labs, one of the most trusted teams in DeFi. Their code is open source and independently reviewed, so you know it's protected. So why wait? Download the Uniswap wallet today on Chrome, iOS, and Android. And don't forget to claim your free uni.eth username directly in the mobile wallet. Start swapping smarter with Uniswap. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open. Roman Storm, the Tornado Cash developer, had a motion to dismiss his own case. That motion was rejected. The ruling by the judge calls into question whether DeFi in the United States is actually currently operating illegally. Whoa, 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 whoa. Okay.
That's the crazy part, dude. That's
my
crazy.
Understanding was that the Roman Storm case determines whether or not the United States can make a smart contract illegal. If Roman Storm goes to jail, it's because the ruling is yes, smart contracts can be illegal. If we prevent him from going to jail, it's because the ruling is no, United States, smart contracts are just technology, they're just software, you can't make them illegal, you can't violate the free speech. That's what I thought was going on. Is that what's not what's going on?
That's all true, and it's also more. I want to get to why this ruling is potentially like incredibly concerning to me and to some of the crypto lawyers that I've talked to sort of behind the scenes. One crypto lawyer told me off the record that they're struggling to figure out how literally anyone who's launched a DeFi protocol is not also committing a crime right now as a result of this ruling, David. Not the future full case for Roman Storm that happens December 2nd, but this ruling. So let's talk about what actually happened with this. So Judge Falea rejected Roman Storm's motion to dismiss in a New York court and ruled that the case could proceed to trial. So there was a motion to dismiss that was rejected, but then she also made a ruling, and she made this ruling verbally, which is somewhat interesting. Basically, the court ruled that using computer code to further alleged money laundering is not a First Amendment protected activity. Okay, so the ruling says code is not speech. And she ruled that there was no custody requirement in the legislation definition of a money transmitter. And this is really important. This is the second part I was talking about. Implicitly threatening the entire industry with additional requirements. Okay, so code is not speech. Like, we kind of anticipated that could be some judge's ruling, right? That was a possibility. Mm-hmm. But the second part...
That was the base case. That was the known concern that we had.
Yes. So the second part, no custody requirement in defining a money transmitter. So
a smart contract can be a money transmitter.
A smart contract that does not, like, take third-party custody, right? Smart contract. It doesn't require, you don't have to be a Coinbase or a BlockFi or Celsius or a, you know, Kraken. Mm-hmm. Right? That would be a custody requirement. You could just be a DeFi application and subject
honestly,
to
like
money
Ethereum is code that custodies money.
Yes.
Ethereum is
See,
illegal.
That's the part that I think people are missing with this ruling. The judge is actually saying all non-custodial DeFi is subject to U.S. money transmission laws. So that means Uniswap, potentially. That means Aave. That means NFT trading. To your point, does that mean Ethereum? We don't know yet.
That you can expand this so far.
Oh my God, yes.
If I have gold sitting on my coffee table, non-custodial, like the vibe around the gold, the universe is a money transmitter. Non-custodial is everything else that's not a custodian.
This would be hopefully an argument that an astute lawyer actually makes in court, you know, like talking about physical objects versus crypto objects and kind of like what's the difference. But
right.
That's why this is such a concerning ruling. And I was a little bit confused, like, why is a ruling coming down? I thought it was just a motion to dismiss. I thought the judge would just be saying, yeah, the case will proceed for Roman or like, no, it will be dismissed. But this is actual legal precedent. So a ruling like this does establish some legal precedent. It's almost like probabilistic finality, if that makes sense, right? It's like some proof of work. This is the way the common law system works. So, you know, one judge says something, makes a ruling, you know, the case isn't finalized. The DeFi as money transmitters is not fully finalized and propagated across all of the US. It's not fully settled, but it does increase kind of the proof of work and the precedent. It does kind of harden the precedent here. So we have the opportunity for other rulings in the future, but it's kind of narrowed. Yes, this is one judge, but it calls into question if other courts will follow the exact same logic and define DeFi as being a money transmitter. And the actual violation is a violation of 18 U.S.C. section 1960. Okay, this is a section that deals with money transmitters and the logic, and it pertains to the illegal operation of money transmitting businesses in the U.S. And it's basically a federal crime to conduct, control, manage, or to own an unlicensed money transmitting business. Okay, and so what they're saying, what this judge is saying, is that Tornado Cash was, as an immutable contract, an unlicensed, unregistered money transmitting business, which again calls into question, is the Uniswap code an unlicensed money transmitting business? Is the Aave code unlicensed money transmitter business?
Who do they expect to ask for a license?
Exactly. And the fact that Roman Storm is now in jail and facing jail time as a result of a bad third party, terrorist, North Korea, whatever, using this code. I mean, the same could happen to Uniswap, right?
Right.
The same.
Well, you can. It's not just smart contracts. It's code. So Ethereum. Ethereum needs to go get a money transmitter license.
Right. And so what are the penalties, by the way, for this Section 1960 violation? Up to 5 years in federal prison.
For whom?
For the potentially the developers.
The
Roman
developers.
Storm was the developer of Tornado Cash in this instance. He wasn't doing the money transmitting himself. He was he developed the code and put it on a code on chain. Up to 5 years in federal prison, forfeiture of the business, fines up to $250,000. All right, so are you following why this is like potentially a big deal? And again, it's one judge ruling, but it's the proof of work precedent in our common law system that makes this incredibly concerning.
Do you think the judge understands the implications that they are creating?
So she actually didn't give this opinion in written form. Usually judges do. Usually judges give the opinion verbally and they also publish it in written form. She didn't in this case. This is Jake Chervinsky. She said she's not going to write an opinion. She read her decision from the bench, and that's all we get. All right. She didn't actually give a written opinion to defend this. She just read it from the bench. So the best we're going to get, and we do have now, is a transcript of what she said from the bench. But Jake says, I think it says a lot that she's not writing it up. So I expect she does know that this is contentious and has potentially disastrous implications here. And I think all of this causes a chilling effect, David. It's like, how do you feel as a founder in the US or in any country launching an immutable DeFi contract when potentially it's a money transmitter and the penalty for this could be arrest and going to jail?
That's the worst that this can get. This is like a nuclear bomb for crypto.
It's kind of bad. Now people will hear this and they'll say, look, it's one judge. You're being Chicken Little about this. You know, the DOJ might say something like, don't be crazy. Okay. This Tornado Cash, these guys were tied in with, like North Korea, DPRK stuff. They're just like bad dudes. We're not going to bring criminal charges against Aave or Uniswap. Of course. Like, but that's kind of like a trust me, bro, legal system.
Right.
It doesn't that depend entirely on who's in control of the DOJ?
That's not how courts work. That's not how courts work.
Yeah. So I'm worried because this court case feels like nothing's protecting us from this. The trial of Roman Storm, where this will get determined to an either even greater degree, that's still scheduled for December 2nd in New York. So that's expected to last 2 weeks. We're going to be paying attention to that because it has massive implications, not just because of what you said earlier, whether a smart contract can be sanctioned or not or can be deemed illegal. That's part of it. But also the future for all DeFi protocols in the United States.
Well, I'll hammer on this point again. It's code that is being marked as the money transmitter, which means Ethereum, Bitcoin, like layer ones are therefore also money transmitters in this context.
Right. I don't know what we're going to do about this, but we'll be taking a look. I am going to be talking. I think you'll be out, David. You're flying somewhere, but I'll be talking to Jake Chervinsky this Friday about this issue and hopefully getting some more legal analysis. I'm not sure it's going to make me feel any better, but one thing that might make you feel better is actually donating to the Roman Storm court case. So he's still trying to raise funds. He needs more in order to pay the legal fees for this highly expensive court case. And if you want to go support that, we'll include a link in the show notes so you can donate to that cause.
All right, getting into subjects around Ripple, everyone's favorite blockchain. Ripple wants an ETF, but Gary wants probably to say no. So Bitwise has filed for the first spot XRP ETF. So now it's the ball is in the court for the SEC to approve or disapprove it.
Oh, what do you think they're going to do, David?
I don't know. Nate Gerarcy commented, Bitwise positioning to file for the XRP ETF is highly noteworthy in the short term. This is likely a call option on the November election, he says.
Bitwise is a highly
credible crypto native fund firm that does not just throw stuff at a wall.
Yep.
Politics matter clearly here in the short term, but I think it is all inevitable over time.
Are they basically saying if Trump wins, then you probably have a shot at getting ETFs like the XRP ETF through, but if he loses, like there's no chance?
Yeah, that's probably right. And I think there's probably actually some amount of demand. It will be really interesting to see the amount of demand for an XRP ETF. The XRP market cap has been a complete mystery to me as why it's been so high for so long. There's some pool of demand somewhere. I don't know where. Not in my friend circles, but somewhere out in the universe. So seeing that show up in an ETF will be interesting. But that's not the only Ripple-related news of this roll-up. The SEC wants to overturn a ruling by Judge Annalisa Torres, who decided that XRP was not a security and its secondary sales did not constitute security sales. So this would imply that any token that's traded on like Uniswap, on any sort of DEX, or even on Kraken or Coinbase, just because it's being traded does not make it a security.
Yeah, it was great news, right?
It was great news,
When XRP, when Ripple won this court case against the SEC. It was great news.
Yeah, it took a lot of wind out of the sails of Gary Gensler's in theory of investing, which is basically everything is a security. But the SEC is coming back for a do-over, asking for a do-over.
Appeal. Just appeal that
exactly.
Case.
And so this can also delay the approval of the Bitwise XRP ETF. The SEC not done yet. It's not even like once upon a time, Jake Chervinsky gave me the take that like maybe the SEC's position is that they're just going to take everything to court and they'll just let the courts decide by litigation, sure. ruling by litigation, yeah. which maybe was a take. But the fact that they're like losing and then going back to
wasting
appeal
our money, David,
is just like
taxpayers.
Another layer of evil yeah. coming out of the SEC.
Yeah, I don't understand why the Democrats don't just get this guy out, cut him loose.
He is just completely rogue.
I don't understand.
The Democrats are just I haven't heard from Biden in months. Kamala is busy trying to get elected.
Where's his base of support? Who's like, yeah, Gary, you're doing a great. I guess we saw some of it in Congress when we saw that Brad Sherman's cheering him on.
Yeah. All the Elizabeth Warren neo-bankers.
I can't believe that's still a contingent. He's just doing such a terrible job for the U.S. right now in crypto, but not just crypto. Some good news, though, this week, his chief attack dog. So SEC Enforcement Chief Graywall decided to step down. It's not the Graywall from Coinbase. That's
not
our guy.
Not related to Paul Graywall. Yeah.
So
not our Graywall, their Graywall.
Yeah, and he was known for aggressive policing of the crypto industry, just kind of leading the charge. Under Mr. Graywall's leadership, the commission authorized more than 100 enforcement actions against the crypto industry. So he is stepping down. And there is some chatter about this. Jake's getting a lot of quotes in this episode. Yeah, Jake Chervinsky saying, this is not normal. Not normal for an SEC enforcement director to get disappeared like this. Gone on 9 days' notice with no replacement lined up. Perhaps the inevitable end to a campaign of unlawful harassment and misrepresentation resulting in many embarrassing defeats in court. So this could be a precursor to Gary Gensler also, being given his exit slip. Maybe
his goodbye.
Maybe this, Mr. Graywall goes first.
Yeah, don't let the door hit you on the way out. All right, coming up next, Vitalik has a solution for making Ethereum alignment great again and also has a take as to what the Ethereum roadmap should look like in the near term. We're going to go through all that and more. And also Visa launching a tokenization platform on Ethereum for fiat, a.k.a. stablecoins, with banks as the customer. That's kind of interesting.
Bank the banks.
Bank the banks. All of this and more. But first, I wanted to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation. The Arbitrum Portal is your one-stop hub to entering the Ethereum ecosystem. With over 800 apps, Arbitrum offers something for everyone. Dive into the epicenter of DeFi, where advanced trading, lending, and staking platforms are redefining how we interact with money. Explore Arbitrum's rapidly growing gaming hub, from immersed role-playing games, fast-paced fantasy MMOs, to casual luck battle mobile games. Move assets effortlessly between chains and access the ecosystem with ease via Arbitrum's expansive network of bridges and on-ramps. Step into Arbitrum's flourishing NFT and creator space, where artists, collectors, and social converge, and support your favorite streamers all on-chain. Find new and trending apps and learn how to earn rewards across the Arbitrum ecosystem with limited time campaigns from your favorite projects. Empower your future with Arbitrum. Visit portal.arbitrum.io to find out what's next on your Web3 journey. New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Pretty cool scoop by Blockworks. Visa launches fiat-backed tokenization platform on Ethereum. They are developing a new product to help banks issue fiat-backed tokens on the Ethereum network. The Visa Tokenized Asset Platform, VTAP, will enable the development of fiat-backed tokens powered by smart contracts to help digitize and automate existing processes that will then power the exchange of real-world assets.
Cool.
Yeah. A bank would use Visa's new platform to purchase tokenized real-world assets such as commodities or bonds with near real-time settlement using a token, the statement said. The first financial institution to use VTAP will be a Spanish bank, BBVA, who expects a rollout of a live pilot in 2025. Pretty cool. Visa on the Ethereum layer one.
All based on Ethereum. So, you know, when you deposit funds into kind of your Wells Fargo account, how it's not like a dollar, it becomes like a Wells Fargo dollar, that sort of thing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Do you think there's a world where every single bank has their own version of like a tokenized dollar
deposits,
on chain?
Yeah.
Deposit on chain? Like there'll be like a Wells Fargo stablecoin kind of thing, and there'll be a a Bank of America stablecoin thing. Right. I mean, all of these will
Baskin
be fungible.
Baskin and Robbins, 31 different flavors of stablecoins.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe something
Dude,
like that.
That
could
would
happen.
Be so bullish for Curve.
For Curve?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, basically.
I haven't
like
heard
the,
of Curve
the
in a while. That's interesting.
Yeah, because it has completely just flipped into just like the background, back end of like stablecoin exchange volumes.
Yeah, just hopefully it's not illegal, David.
Thank you for that reminder.
David, you read this blog post Vitalik shared earlier this week, his thoughts on how to make Ethereum alignment legible. So he's getting into kind of like, what are the values that really define Ethereum? And he mentioned a few things. Open source. So allowing for the inspection of code to ensure security and reduce risks of lock-in. So open source is a big Ethereum value, according to him. Open standards, you know, things like ERC-20s, ERC-1271s, account abstraction, that kind of thing. Decentralization and security. And he defines this a little bit, like the walkaway test, which is, does the app remain usable if the team and all the servers disappear? Like if everybody walked away, is it still usable? I mean, that's one definition of a decentralization. And what's the potential damage if the team attempts to compromise the system? So, and then lastly, he talked about positive sum network effects for Ethereum being kind of a core value. So things like using Ether as a token to enhance the Ethereum network effect. So this was kind of like, these are soft and I would say more squishy values oriented dimensions of what constitutes Ethereum alignment. But then he also created like a call to action to start measuring some of this. Mm-hmm. And he gives some great examples of ways we're already measuring it, which is kind of cool. Like MEV Watch is a fantastic dashboard tool that measures basically the censorship resistance of Ethereum. You know, what blocks are OFAC sanctioned and what aren't. So that's good kind of transparency check and balance. We also have dashboards for client diversity, which shows kind of the, you know, the portfolio of diversity of all of the ETH clients. We have dashboards like L2Beat, which are just phenomenal and kind of tracking the centralization or decentralization levels of layer twos. And these are the dashboard metrics he's kind of calling the Ethereum community to kind of develop. So we can have our own internal regulatory system. I got to say, yeah. I think this is, it's an unspoken value proposition of Ethereum. It's actually like a core strength Ethereum has, is these dashboards as kind of regulators as a check on the system to maintain the decentralization. They're certainly doing a far better job than any of the nation state regulators
at this. Regulators, yeah.
Yeah, and I see this pretty uniquely in the Ethereum community. I mean, there's some in Bitcoin, there's some in other communities for sure, but Ethereum's really doing a stellar job at this.
Mm-hmm. I think regulation via dashboard, it's kind of based, actually.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah, because like the dashboards actually don't enforce anything. It actually just helps the social layer become more informed and take more action about things. Not the only Vitalik take of the week. On a core dev call, Vitalik made a pretty strong appeal for increasing blob counts for the Pectra upgrade. Pectra has been split into a very big hard fork, has been split into two hard forks with PureDAS, which is the kind of the qualitative upgrade of Ethereum blob space, just allowing blobs to just pack more punch. That has actually been pushed out into the second half of the Pectra upgrade. So TBD on that is being pushed out into the future. As a result of that, Vitalik makes an appearance on the core dev call saying, since we are doing that, we should increase the quantitative amount of blobs today. I thought that there was actually a pretty useful clip from the core dev call, so we'll go ahead and play that right now.
So I think, the reason why we need to think about this is because, like, if you just look realistically, to me, it's just clear that just scaling actual usage is just incredibly important. And you know, if Ethereum does not offer this, then, like, people will find it elsewhere, and people are going to have, insecure blockchain experiences that are just not on Ethereum, right? And... The And I would even argue that like even a 33% blob increase is probably more valuable than like even three of the Vectra EIPs at this point. So if you just like look at the ratio of effort to value, just like the amount of actual value here is quite high in terms of increasing increasing the amount of activity that can happen.
That was interesting. Like, he almost never appears at these core dev calls and weighs in, right? And so this is not unprecedented, but I haven't seen this in a while. And he's sort of making the case, David, that like if we don't do this, then users will turn to other communities that are less secure and less decentralized. So is this war mode Vitalik?
This is the first time I've seen Vitalik actually been like, hey, let me like draw out some of the actual points that he's making. He wants to increase the blob target from 3 to 4 and the max blobs from 6 to 8. And he cites the fact that currently blob space, blobs are 75% full, and making the case that if we reach 100% full, then as a result of just being at capacity, blobs are going to get expensive and layer twos are going to choose to use different DAA providers that aren't Ethereum, citing in unstable blockchain experiences. And think like therefore implying that Ethereum has a higher quality block space, which I think is pretty hard to argue that it doesn't. But also he's like, it's like a market competition perspective of it's like if we don't do this, we're going to lose market share of rollups who use our DA. And we want to ensure that we have the best pricing of the best quality of it's like it's kind of war mode
Yeah,
Vitalik.
it's still penetration pricing, right? For it to get all collect all of the L2s and lock them in.
So some summary of the takes around the ecosystem. Dankrat as well are and other Base devs are in huge favor of this. Jesse said that Base is actually interested in consuming even more blob space. So he would approve any sort of just increasing of the blob space availability on the Ethereum layer one. There's some pushback as well. But generally, I think people are leaning into supportive of this. And
What
I
are the
think
trade-offs
Vitalik is
here? It's just going to increase slightly to some degree the node requirements for validators and stakers, right?
Not node requirements, because that implies hardware. It's just bandwidth costs. And the bandwidth is like the big bottleneck for all Ethereum scaling in this present moment.
Yeah. I've never seen those measurements actually. Like how much bandwidth does it take to actually run a validator pre this and post this, you know? It's like obviously you have to have high speed internet, but do you need like you don't need gigabit internet at this point.
Well, I think the argument being made by many solo stakers is that solo stakers live in places where like internet's not amazing. And we want to be able to run Ethereum in like, middle
Like your
America
5G
or
network should be able to run an
There's
Ethereum
just there's
node.
Like a lot of places in the world that have like okay internet. And we want to make sure that Ethereum can run in places with okay internet.
Yeah, I get it. It's an interesting debate that's going on, but Vitalik kind of leaning into the let's get competitive and let's go win this.
Speaking of Jesse Pollock, he has been elevated. He has been promoted to the Coinbase exec team. So congratulations. He is now actually working on the Coinbase wallet project as well as Base, in addition to joining the Coinbase exec team. The Coinbase exec team, I don't know if these are the only 8 people, but there are 8 headshots here from this Coinbase website saying our executive team, starting with Brian Armstrong, of course, Emily Choi, and all of these are like very professional, like warmly tinted, pretty uniform headshots. And then when it gets to Jesse, it's his goddamn CryptoPunk.
I love that, like, trad investors in Wall Street are going to see this, all the annual filings.
They let him keep his CryptoPunk as his headshot. That's just great.
This is kind of cool. Polymarket has an app too. So they recently released, I believe, an iOS app, might also be available on Android, that allows you to just like look at all of the different election forecasts that Polymarket is putting together, because TradFi Media is recognizing Polymarket as a fantastic source of this type of information, prediction information. Of course, it's read only, because actually participating in these markets like is illegal in the US, right? But it's number two on the download charts right
News,
now. And that's above
And download charts of news.
Of download charts of news. And that's above the New York Times and CNN right now.
Yeah, suck it.
That's kind of cool.
Suck it.
Shane Coplin, the founder of Polymark, calls this the flippening, the news edition. So,
CZ tweeted out GM this last week. That's the news. Why did he tweet out GM? Because it got released from prison. So congrats to CZ for getting out and tweeting out a GM that got almost 200,000 likes.
Crazy.
16 million views.
I mean,
I always
wondered if he'd come out as a hero, if that's what, like, you know, how crypto would sort of view him. And certainly that seems to be the case.
Yeah, definitely. Talk to me about North Korea, Ryan.
Talk to you about North Korea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So the relevant news about North Korea was this article from Sam Kessler from Coinbase. And the title of it is How North Korea Infiltrated the Crypto Industry. And the subcaption is this: more than a dozen blockchain firms inadvertently hired undercover IT workers from rogue states, mostly from North Korea. So David, over the last 4 years or so, this is starting to come out. It seems like the crypto industry, 12 companies that have just reported this, I'm sure it's far more that have gone unreported. Organizations like Sushi, like Yearn Finance, like Cosmos, like Phantom, like Injective, okay? These are some sort of crypto DeFi-related projects. They all inadvertently hired North Korean agents, like accidentally. Wow. So they post it works like this. You post a job post, right? Software developer something. And what's kind of the open source way? You hire based on merit, right? Like, show me your GitHub, show me your like code. I don't care where you live. Yeah. I don't care, you know, who you are. Can you
don't
ship
care
code?
Your race, don't care your gender.
Yeah, big question is, can you ship? And so these North Koreans are showing up with fake identities. Let me show you an example of this. This is a fake identity from Texas, okay? Yeah. This is like a driver's license from Texas. And they are
that would pass me.
Even doing this with professional background testing. So this is a North Korean agent which has a passport, okay,
right.
And they're getting into these companies and starting to ship code. And guess what? Why they're there, David? It's not to actually productively work. These are agents, North Korean agents, working for the government, and they're looking for ways to siphon funds, some malicious code in a protocol, find an opportunity to steal money in order to ship it back to North Korea and support North Korea's weapons programs and other things. Okay, so
Korea is doing almost anything that they can think of.
Do you know Zaki Manian,
yeah.
From Cosmos? Okay, it's like we've known him for a long time. So apparently Zaki inadvertently hired. He got a message from the FBI saying there's some weird crypto transactions coming to your accounts. What's going on? He looked into it, and it turned out he had hired two North Korean employees at his like Cosmos staking infrastructure company inadvertently. And his comment was this: I talked to them for every day for almost a year. They did the work, and I was frankly pretty pleased. Like, they were good employees for an entire year before they decided.
Imagine if it's your job to go get a job and be a good employee at somebody else. Like, that's
talk
your
about
job.
Playing the long game, man. Like, the long con here. And this was kind of eye-opening for me because, you know, go further in the articles, someone made the statement that it's looking like almost 50% of job applications for crypto jobs at this point in time,
crypto developers, yeah,
crypto dev jobs, might actually be North Korean agents. All right. So what does this do to the trust fabric of everybody who's hiring in crypto?
There are North Korean listeners of this podcast right now.
That is terrifying.
People are listening to this. But there are people listening to this who are North Korean infiltrators of crypto companies' jobs, and they're like, fuck, they might be on
well,
to me.
Like, yeah, maybe in their interviews, they're you know, dropping Bankless episodes that they've listened to or something like this, right? It could be relevant. This is absolutely wild.
Oh, my God.
I think, obviously, if you're hiring in crypto, be on the lookout for this. Be extra careful.
Right.
You got to implement some background checks.
They showed him a Texas license.
Yeah, and I think this might be just scratching the surface. Like, my nightmare scenario is a North Korean agent gets into kind of some core dev client code. Can you imagine that? Inject something? Like, if you're the Ethereum Foundation, you're reading this, I hope you guys are doing some robust screening.
Right.
Every single group that's working on a client, because we have been a bit trusting in this industry. Again, the open source rule, you can ship code, you have merit.
Yeah. Right.
Well, some of these North
Nothing
Korean agents
matters,
can do that. Like, they're good employees, maybe, at first it seems. And also, another thing is, do you know it's highly illegal to actually hire any North Korean workers?
Inside of the Bankless Discord, inside of Bankless Ventures, Ryan Sean Adams here dropped a comment where he goes, hey, FYI, we need to make sure our portfolio companies aren't hiring anyone from North Korea. Hiring someone from North Korea is illegal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh, you don't say.
Well, but like, It's illegal, and it's one of those things where if they decided to enforce it, I mean, it's like possible like jail time and like all sorts of bad things, David. All Yikes. Sorts of fines and stuff like this. Yikes. They haven't enforced on these crypto companies.
17,000 ways to go to jail in this industry.
Oh, I love this industry. Anyway, we're leveling up. Like, no one else is front running all of the chaos of the 21st century like crypto. We're doing that for everyone else.
Yeah, that's what I was here to do.
David, you are getting ready for your fight, okay? We're on the eve.
Yep.
We are, what, like 7 days
eight
out?
Days.
8 days out away. At the time of recording. Mm-hmm. So we promised some alpha. You give some alpha. This is you. Is this a real-life picture of you?
Yep.
And your fight
post. So Josh, our podcast editor, just came over to like this one-on-one time I had with my coach. Because, you know, everyone was very hyped about Nick Carter's video when he did his video. So I was like, you know what? I want one.
Yeah. So you got a hype video coming up?
Yeah, I got a hype video coming up.
So stay tuned for that. And I saw this hype video. I think this is Kane Warwick's hype video.
I was not very hyped by this. I don't know about you. This didn't do too much for me.
Oh yeah, I don't know what it does to me, but I guess it's impressive. He's getting that sound that you're hearing, podcast listener, is Kane getting slapped in the stomach by his trainer. Like glove slapped in the stomach.
It's not that hard.
That doesn't intimidate you?
He did 10 sit-ups. My coach does that to me. I don't film it.
Here's what was so weird to me is like you guys just recorded a podcast like the week before your fight.
Yeah,
so you came over to your house.
Podcast. It'll come out next week.
An in-person podcast. All right.
Yeah.
So
we actually just settled the fight with a thumb war, actually. So like we're good.
No, but like, what'd you think? I mean, he's sitting probably on the couch behind you. He's probably sitting across from you. You're staring into the face of, you know, somebody that's you're either going to beat down or he's going to beat you down. And like, what'd you think? Were you intimidated or do you feel like, yeah, I got this?
I think it'll be a pretty good fight. I think it'll be a pretty good fight.
All right. Well, I mean, that's the alpha. Honestly, I just wanted to hear what you said about this. The Poly Market right now could be an opportunity, Bankless listeners. Poly Market is getting
that is
70...
deep value. Hoffman is deep value on the Poly Market.
Deep value, according to David Hoffman.
Deep value.
32% odds. So this could be the buy of a lifetime.
Hoffman. Yeah, well, it's 32% odds is the middle of the market. If you buy me, you're buying at 39%.
Wait, how's that work?
Because the market is kind of illiquid, so there's a spread. There's a spread.
Yeah, there's 10K on this right now. I mean,
we could
boost those numbers up. I think there's could be a fantastic opportunity. It wouldn't
take
somebody.
Too much to move this market pretty far.
Well, this is, I guess, final notice because permissionless is
This is the last warning to come to permissionless.
I'm excited about it. I can't wait to see everyone in person. It's going to be like content is going to be incredible. Who are some of the speakers? Like I'm talking to Chris Dixon the first day. I'm super excited about that. I had the pre-call last week. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of things to say. He's got a lot of things to say. It's going to be interesting.
Me and Jill Gunter from Espresso are going up against Kyle Samani and Max Resnick.
Oh, wow.
About whether or not Ethereum layer twos are Ethereum. I think that's going to be pretty hot.
Wow.
And the great thing is that is just like 4 hours before my fight with Kane. So I'm just going to be fucking jacked. I'm going to be ready to go.
Just adrenaline pumping?
Yeah.
That's
I'm like, all right, who wants to fight?
No, it's going to be a great event. And a reminder, there's still, if you're a last-minute person, you're like, I don't know if I can go. It's in Salt Lake City. It starts on what, Wednesday?
Wednesday the 9th.
Wednesday the 9th.
Friday the 11th.
And
Bankless party on Wednesday at 5 p.m. at a brewery. Free drinks. I will not be drinking. Ryan might be drinking. So if you are a Bankless citizen going to permissionless, make sure you come to our party.
And Bankless listeners, you get a 10% discount off these tickets. So Bankless 10 for your last minute ticket. If you are a Bankless citizen, there's a 30% link in the show notes for you where you can get a major discount. Guys, you know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. Next week, we're headed to Salt Lake. This is not for everybody.
We're literally going west. Wow.
Yeah, we are going to the frontier. But we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.